This is the Josh Tolley Show on the GCN Radio Network.
Render unto Caesar that which is Caesar. Submit to a government because it's God ordained. You know, we hear this all the time, and Americans from coast to coast are getting so frustrated with a government that is pushing sex down your kids' throats. They're pushing police brutality at every street corner. I mean, it is just insane the country we live in. If you would have asked people 50 years ago, do you think this would happen in America, they'd say, no. This is Russia. This is China, something like that. And your founding fathers would have been in the streets by now. I'm just saying. But you go to churches and you hear, well, you know, just admit it's God appointed. Don't worry about it. What if we were wrong about that? And joining us, we have a pastor. His name is Ted Wieland. He has a book, Christian Duty Under Corrupt Governments. I'm telling you, you have to get this. It's a revolutionary commentary on Romans 13, which is pretty much the foundation where people get this mindset. So, Mr. Wieland, welcome back to the show. How are you doing, sir?
I'm good, Josh. It's actually Wieland.
Wieland, I am so sorry.
That's all right. It looks like Wieland, so it's understandable. But anyway, it is Wieland. And thank you for allowing me to share the time with you and your audience again.
Yeah, well, it was a pleasure having you last time, and it was really eye-opening. A lot of comments came back, and I know a lot of response into your website as well. And
absolutely,
we left off with this subject, should Christians just kind of roll over? And it's something that a lot of people are asking because of Romans 13. So we have a lot of atheist listeners who don't even know what we're talking about. Let's just start with Romans 13. What's this premise that we're operating under?
Well, Romans 13 verses 1 and 2 in particular are certainly two of the, what I consider, two of the most abused and misused verses in the New Testament. Not that there aren't plenty of others, but the fact that these two are used in the fashion they are, not by non-Christians as much as they are by Christians, ironically, that they're abused and misused has, in fact, a greater impact than a lot of other things that sometimes we may disagree over or that we may misinterpret. Let me just read these two verses to you to begin with, because this is the basis of an argument that Christians are obligated to submit themselves to any and all government authority, regardless who or what they are and what they're doing. So the two verses are as follows, Romans 13, verses 1 and 2. Let every person be in subjection to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God, and those which exist are established by God. Therefore, he who resists authority has opposed the ordinance of God, and they who have opposed will receive condemnation upon themselves. Now, if you read those two verses, Josh, as I know you're aware of, by in and of themselves, it certainly would appear that what a lot of Christian pastors are saying today, that Christians are obligated by the Bible, by those two verses, to submit to government authority, regardless what it is. If you take those two verses by itself, that certainly sounds like what it's saying. But the problem is that those two verses have been robbed of their context in order to be able to say that. And not only their context, but their immediate context. Verses 3 and 4 in particular. As you have seen in my commentary, I address all of the first seven verses of Romans 13, a verse at a time. I give the usual interpretation, and then I respond to that. Well, when I get to verses 3 and 4, if you'll recall, on verse 4, I provide the usual interpretation. The usual interpretation of verse 3 is silence. And then when I get to verse 4, the usual interpretation I provide for it is more silence. Because there is no way you can interpret verses 1 and 2 as meaning all government if you add verses 3 and 4 to it. Let me do that if I can. Where it says, for rulers, talking about those who have been put in authority by God, for rulers are not a cause of fear for good behavior, but for evil. Do you want to have fear of authority? Do what is good, and you will have praise from the same. For it is a minister of God to you for good. But if you do what is evil, be afraid, for it does not bear the sword for nothing, for it is a minister of God, an avenger who brings wrath upon those who practice wickedness or evil. And if you take those two verses, then it becomes very clear that Paul was not referring to any and all governments in verses 1 and 2. In fact, the word authority, and I wish I would have dealt with this, if I redo the book again in the future, I will concentrate on the word authority there. It may be found as power in some versions, but it's the correct word is authority, exousia. God is sovereign. He is over all governments, and there are two types of governments that he puts in authority. Those who are for our punishment because we are a wicked people, such as what we might find in America today, and those who are in authority. There are those who are in power, but they are not an authority. They are not a God-ordained authority. They are just a power. And then there are those who are under his authority who bring the sword upon the wicked and praise the good, which certainly doesn't describe much that's going on today and certainly didn't describe the government in place in Rome in the first century A.D. that Paul was referring or not referring to, excuse me. Anyway, that's a quick summation, quick as I can make it anyway at this point, to kind of bring everybody up to speed here.
Well, and you know, I speak at a lot of churches, and I'm noticing a trend where this is coming up more and more. I mean, 10 years ago when I was in churches, this wasn't an issue. People are realizing, hey, wait a second, our government has jumped the shark, and you know, it's not Republicans, it's not Democrats, it's just everybody. It's D.C. Yeah. They've sold their soul, evidently. And people are saying, you know, what do we do? And it's amazing how many churches are saying, well, you know, just know that God put them in place and we have to submit to their authority. And to me, I'm thinking, wait a second, I read that verse and I understand if it's taken out of context how you're getting there, Pastor so-and-so. But we don't see examples of that in Scripture. And if we use Scripture to interpret Scripture, we certainly don't get that meaning. So why are we going there? Obviously, these pastors went to seminary. They should know the context, right?
Boy, good question. Particularly, you go back and look at pre-revolutionary American pastors and preachers of that day and age who understood this passage very well, Pastor Jonathan Mayhew and Pastor Cook and several others. And in fact, in my book, I kind of just acquiesce over to those guys, and the majority of the book is quotes from those men who certainly understood what Paul was talking about. And somehow, I don't know how, Josh, how we have lost that heritage and that understanding, particularly, like you said, when the context very clearly describes the type of authority that. And that's so important that we understand we're talking authority, not just power.
Well, sir, hold on one second. We're up against a break. That's a great place to hold for a second, and we'll continue this conversation right after this. We're talking to Ted Weiland, the book, Christian Duty Under Corrupt Government. You got to get this. It's a real simple read. It's under 100 pages, but it's so precise and concise, talking about this issue of are we just to roll over if we're a bunch of believers. And this, I believe this is a massively huge issue because this is what has allowed us, and correct me if I'm wrong here, sir, but this is what it has allowed us to backslide as a nation, because we gave up ground that we held. This is insane. The founding fathers would say, wait a second, you were supposed to build upon the foundation we gave you, not slowly give it away.
Well, yeah, that's certainly true. It's at least one of the issues. It's really a combination of two or three major issues that has brought us to this point. This idea of the necessity or the requirement, obligation for Christians to simply roll over and submit to any government regardless what they're doing, coupled with, and particularly with, the idea, and this represents most of Christianity, regrettably today as well, that God's moral laws have been abolished under the New Covenant, are no longer relevant, and therefore, yeah. Where do we have to turn if we don't turn to man's government? So those two in particular have all but neutralized, castrated Christianity, and what we've become, Josh, is what I think best depicted by Christ in Matthew 5:13, where he describes us, I say us, Christianity today, as much as in other times or at his time, as salt that's lost its savor, good for nothing, but to be trampled under the foot of man. And that's where we find ourselves. His word is true. We're being trampled. Now, not all is bad news in that, because a good trampling tends to bring back some of the saltiness. And that's where things are getting bad enough that, people are starting to wake up and starting to realize, well, wait a minute, maybe even this interpretation of Romans 13, 1 and 2 isn't what we have thought it is. So, yeah.
Well, exactly.
It's had a big impact.
And when we look at history, you know, you have Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They were told by the government, hey, you know, bow down to me. And they said, no, we're not going to do it. Now, if they were supposed to be followers of the one true God, then they would have, if this would have been true, right? They would have said, oh, okay, well, yeah, all power and authority is, you know, placed in position, so I'll just bow down. Same thing is true with Daniel, and he's told, you know, hey, you have to pray to Nimrod, and he's like, no, or you can't pray, rather. And he's like, no, I'm going to do it, and I'm going to do it with open windows and, you know, basically get lost. He didn't say, oh, yeah, you know, I have to bow down. So we don't see examples of this modern, weak America, and I think, and correct me if I'm wrong again, I think we have exchanged meek for weak, and there's just this soft milquetoast sort of Christianity that's prevailing across America.
Absolutely. And let me add to your list here, just, and this is, I'm going to read from page 11 of the commentary here, under verse 2, the modern interpretation being anyone who resists or rebels against any civil authority commits a crime and thereby opposes God himself, and he will thereby be punished by God. That's the usual interpretation. Well, if the modern interpretation of verse 2 is correct, then Shiphrah and Puah, the two midwives in Exodus 1, Amram and Jochebed, Moses' parents in Exodus 2, Moses in Exodus 2, 5 through 14, Rahab in Joshua 2, Ehud in Judges 3, Gideon in Judges 6 through 8, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in Daniel 3, Daniel in Daniel 6, and Peter, John, and the rest of the apostles in Acts 4 through 5 should have been condemned and punished by Yahweh, the God of the Bible, for opposition to the rulers of their day. So obviously, that is not an exhaustive list of men who said, wait a minute, you're doing wrong. There is an authority greater than you, Nebuchadnezzar, or Pharaoh, or Nero, or Obama, or the Congress that we face today. There is a greater authority who we recognize as not only more powerful than you, but who is sovereign even over you, and in fact has placed you probably where you're at, but not for the good of mankind, but for their transgressions. For example, in Daniel 4:17, God is sovereign. Let's not take away from that, and nothing happens outside his control. And therefore, in Daniel 4 and verse 17, Daniel wrote, he said that the Most High is ruler over the realm of mankind and bestows on it whomever he wishes. And then he says, and he sets over it the lowliest, or New American Standard says, basest of men. Well, there are times when that's not his wish or his desire, but there are times when we get what we deserve, and we're certainly getting it today, and God has placed over us men like Obama all of the criminal cronies, Obama's criminal cronies, whether elephants or donkeys, it doesn't matter. A whole bunch of them are pretty much described there by Daniel.
Well, and you know, for those who are believers, this is a really dangerous interpretation, this wrong interpretation, because if they were to carry this out, then they are to then submit to the Antichrist, because that is God-ordained and God-appointed. So wouldn't they say, well, yeah, you know, well, we might as well take the mark of the beast or whatever, because they just follow that submission. And to me, that would be a wrong interpretation.
Well, they're already submitting to Antichrist, as described by John. It's the passage is actually about the Antichrist. Found John's the only one who mentions the Antichrist, and in his epistles, he describes him actually as a plurality of people already in existence at the time, and he was telling them already not to submit. So to such Antichrist, but the Antichrist are all around us today as well, of course. And so it's a very, very dangerous doctrine that has, again, neutralized Christianity to where they have, outside of the four walls of their homes and their church buildings, they no longer have any effect. They've become culturally impotent. Anywhere beyond the stained glass windows of their church buildings, and hardly even effective there anymore because of such doctrines that we're talking about.
Would it be fair to say that any instruction that comes from a government that causes you to sin is obviously an instruction that you are not supposed to follow? I mean, look at the Nuremberg trials, right? Well, I was just doing my duty, I was just doing my job, but that didn't save people. I mean, that's not good enough. You still were held to a higher moral authority in that case. From a Christian perspective, we can't say, well, I was just listening to government, or I was just adhering to civil law because, you know, that's the law of the land. We can't say that, can we?
Well, let me say this, and this is something else I wish I would have actually put in the book, and again, I will when we do a rewrite sometime in the future. But let's understand this first and foremost, and that is that Romans 13, verse 1 doesn't begin there. Romans 13, 1 does, but the whole idea, the thought, you know, take out the chapter subdivisions that weren't originally found in the original manuscripts, and the thought process, the context actually begins before then. And I want to focus in particularly on verse 18, where we're told the following. It says, if possible, so far as it depends upon you, be at peace with all men. So far as it depends upon us as Christians, that is one of our principal goals, is that we're to be at peace with all men, and even with the government that we find ourselves under today, that is so wicked and so ungodly that they're murdering infants, paying for the murdering of infants in their mother's womb. And it probably won't be far down the road where they'll be killing them even as they come out, and already are, in fact. But we're to be at peace with all men. Let's understand that as Christians, we should be ideal citizens under whatever government we have to, what we find ourselves under.
Sir, hold on one second. Once again, we're up against a break, but I would love to hear how those two things mend together. How do we blend ideal citizen with believer in the one true God? We'll be back right after this. All right, we're talking to Ted Weiland about this call to submit to any government, while at the same time getting a proper interpretation of that call. And in the last segment, we kind of left off with how do you be a good citizen while at the same time stand up for your values, adhere to what you are called to be. And I think in a lot of cases, Ted, this is hard to do because, like you said, we have a government which is funding the killing of babies. We are in wars that have no moral justification. We promote sex to 11-year-olds, for goodness sakes, through our Common Core curriculum. How do we say, oh yeah, totally, I'm gonna fund this, I'm gonna work for you, I'm gonna submit to you, while at the same time standing up for what we believe in?
Okay, well, let me, in case we've had some people come on since the break, I was working off of Romans chapter 12 and verse 18, which do not let it escape the notice of your people or your audience that that's only four verses before chapter 13 and verse 1. And again, there were no chapter subdivisions originally in the manuscript. So this is a part of the thought that leads into Romans 13. And in verse 18, it says, if possible, not always possible, but if possible, so far as it depends upon you, us as Christians, he wrote, be at peace with all men. So that should be a goal of our lives, that we be at peace with everyone we can, and with that, to be ideal citizens under whatever government we happen to be under, even when it's an ungodly, wicked government, and very obviously so. To the point, Josh, and as I know you know, to the point where they require of us to do something that is opposed to or against or not in harmony with our greater authority, and that is the one and only sovereign over all of his creation, our God, King, Judge, and Lawgiver, the great I Am, as known as Yahweh in the Old Testament, when his name is reinserted where it should be there. So to any place where it's not opposed to God's moral laws, we should say, okay, I can get along with you there. I personally, if we were under God's laws, many of the traffic laws that we have today would not be necessary. God's law takes care of those things in a different fashion. But, you know, while we're under this system, I'm glad we've got them, and so I'm going to submit to the traffic laws, to the speed limits, and so forth and so on, the best I can, so that I can be at peace. Let's be at peace here. But where the line is drawn, it should be drawn for every single Christian, where the powers of today are dictating something to us that is contrary or hostile to our God and his morality and his ethics as found in his moral triune law, his commandments, statutes, and judgments, which are just as applicable today as they were from eternity. They weren't given to us first at Mount Sinai. They were simply codified into the new covenant at Mount Sinai. In Genesis 26:5, I believe it is, we're told that Abraham kept the commandments and laws and statutes even in his day. So the laws, the moral laws, we're talking about the moral laws of God as found in the commandments, statutes, and judgments are still in effect today, and when we understand that, then we have a standard, an immutable standard, by which we can judge not only our own behavior, but the behavior of others around us, our neighbors, and the behavior of our government, to say whether this is an area I should be at peace with them, or whether I'm saying, wait a minute, no, I'm not going to promote the murder of children. I'm not going to promote homosexuality. I'm going to stand against those things. Ephesians 5:11, Paul wrote, he said, do not participate in the unfruitful deeds of darkness. But he didn't end there. He went on and he said, but instead expose them. And therefore, we should not only say, I'm not going to participate, but I'm going to expose you whenever and everywhere I can, that we might get our nation back to her God, as really back to the 1600s rather than the late 1700s.
Well, let's kind of take that then. Let's take it back to the 1600s and 1700s. And in your other appearance on the show, we talked about the difference. And man, what a difference there was between the settlers of America and then the revolutionaries. But for argument's sake, let's just use the revolutionaries, the 1700s. What did they use as a moral justification to not adhere to Romans 13 according to modern interpretation and just submit to the king? Because, I mean, according to most churches today, those guys were sinning. You know, they should have submitted to the king, because really you're objecting over a tax without representation? Come on. And really you're objecting to the lack of free enterprise? That's not something you should revolt against your king, you know. And of course I'm being sarcastic here, but that would be the modern interpretation.
Right. Well, actually, let's talk about the pastors, the pre-revolutionary pastors, again, that many of whom I quote in this commentary, and many of them who are actually addressing, not just generically this issue, but some of them who are directly addressing Romans 13, 1 through 7, and oh, for such men, at least on this issue, in our podiums and our pulpits today. but their authority was Romans 13 as it should be understood. And, of course, the examples of Shifra and Pua and Moses and Daniel and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and the apostles and several others in the Old Testament that gave us an example of, listen, we will stand, we will die, we will... You can put us to death, you can put us in the fiery furnace, but we're not going to submit to you when you're requiring us to do something in disobedience or contrary to our God and His will for our lives. And so that's where they were appealing to. Regrettably, I will add this in light of our last time together, that the men who followed some of that teaching, regrettably, it wasn't all that much longer, and they were failing themselves to establish what we had in the 1600s, or reestablish what we had in the 1600s, governments of, by, and for God, based upon His immutable moral laws, and instead established governments of, by, and for the people, which is humanism. Just think about the term. And not only that, but based upon Enlightenment and Masonic concepts for the most part. And so it's no wonder that from 1787 on, we ended up, that is a defining point in history to where we can work ourselves back to and say everything started to go wrong there. And why wouldn't it have started to go wrong when they based it not upon, there's nothing that indicates that they based it upon God's laws or upon submission to God, and therefore it was incremental, but that's the defining point when Pandora's box was opened up, and why we find ourselves today teetering so precipitously on the precipice of moral degradation and destruction today.
Anybody
who wasn't with us last time, boy, that's gonna raise some eyebrows at the very least. Again.
And they can always go grab the archive of your last appearance on the show too to get some context there. But that kind of leads us to Thomas Jefferson's proposed seal, which said rebellion to tyrants is obedience to God. Is that statement true? And if it is, we need to realize that the government we're under now is multiple times more tyrannical than the one that they were fighting against.
Well, I actually quote that in my commentary, and once again, that's something that I would change. I would take out. I use the term rebellion and resistance interchangeably in the commentary, and as we grow in knowledge and understanding, or hopefully grow in knowledge and understanding, we have to sometimes fine tune what we have done in the past. Regrettably, with books, you got to wait until the next edition. But I would change the word rebellion, and I probably wouldn't use that quote, at least not without explanation. Really, the word, we shouldn't be a people of rebellion. Ours, in other words, we shouldn't be, if we're going to be dealt with, it shouldn't be because of rebellion to anything or anyone. It should be because of our obedience to our God.
Hold on 1 second. We're up against a break, but obedience to your God would appear to be rebellious to the one who's trying to control you in most aspects, and maybe that's justification anyway. But we'll get the answers to this. Sir, can you hang on just for one or two more segments?
You bet.